Welcome to episode 82 of No Shame. Fresh off the plane I am from the trip to Italy, so the IMAF European Open it was. I actually only found out the difference between an Open and a Championships. This is it. So we're just doing a hooligan report this week because there's so much went on there. The Bare Knuckle Boxing the weekend, Artem Lobov fighting the Pigeon, which is Paulie Maganagi, and obviously Bellator and all the other fights that went on as well. But do you know why it's called an Open or a Championship?
No.
It's called an Open, which means it's open to all the countries in the world. If it's European Championships, it means it's just the Europeans.
Yeah, because I just assumed European fighters, and then we've seen like Nate's taking on a Canadian.
Should we walk the Brazil lad out?
Yeah.
Lad from Brazil. Trains in, I think he trains in Concord actually, but he was with Jir, Gustavo, his name is. Purple belt in jiu-jitsu. Half guard, a deep half guard sweeping people he was in the heavyweight division. That's playing with death. Deep half guard means that you have to go under the person, tie up your two hands, and expose your head with the person, with your kind of sitting on your head for a little minute before you roll them. And in the heavyweight division, that's psychopath.
Gustavo, was it?
Gustavo, his name was, yeah. But lovely lad as well. Lovely lad as well. But anyway, so the European Open was on in Italy. It was roasting. I nearly bleed melted out there, I did. Like, I was nearly sure that people were going to have to bring me back in a bucket, Rob. You know what I mean? Like, lost about 3 kilo we did out there in the sun as well. So, the stadium that we were in looks like this, looks like a spaceship it does, right? So, we flew into Rome, obviously, rented a car, crazy. Car straight away, jumping onto the other side of the road. If anybody's ever drove on the other side of the road, it's an adventure, isn't it?
Scary.
It's scary. And the mad thing is that it's just everything in your body and your senses is going wrong about you. You're driving down the wrong side of the road. Here's another little did you know. Do you know why we drive on the left and the rest of the world drives on the right?
No.
Because during the revolution, the American Revolution, when England were fighting with America, they were on the right side of the road and England didn't want to be driving on the same side as them, just as pure like out of pure like stubbornness, if you must. So yeah. A lot of the places, so Australia is the same. So Australia,
I always thought that I was like everyone else drives on the wrong side of the road, and then you come to the realization that it's just us in England and a few countries, like we're the ones that are driving on the wrong side of the road.
We're on the wrong side of the road, and the bad thing is it's the Irish way. They're on the wrong side of the road.
Yeah.
Everybody said it. But that alone, like, that's scary, scary stuff. But, like, you want to see me by the end of it. Like, when you're going around the roundabout by the opposite side, shitting yourself, you'll be going around them. But it was, like, we got by the end of it. But then, just when you're getting used to it, guess what happens? You go home, and you're back on the left side, and you're on the other side of the car. First time I've ever drove a car with a gear shift as well in it. So a manual car, you usually get an auto, so I'm on the other side of the road, so I'm not thinking about that. So with the gears, that was one time you're driving through, and like, I'm trying to put it into second gear, trying to check my mirror on the other side of the road, looking the wrong way, and stuff like that for stuff coming, and trying to hide the radio all at the same time. Pretty dangerous, pretty dangerous.
Was there any near misses on...
Any near ones? Yes, loads. I'm pretty sure there's a few broken bushes and stuff like that. Yeah, the car rental company. Actually, no. What am I saying? There's no misses that wasn't. But trying to rent the car. Anyone ever have this experience as well? Pisses me off. Why don't they put the full price there? You get dragged into this little industrial estate on some smelly bus that you're getting dragged down there, right? When you finally find it, you queue up and then you get your car. And then the guy turns around, like, that'll be 300-400 euro. You're like, but I said 2 euro a day or something like that. Oh yeah, but that doesn't count. Here's another thing that frustrates me when it is. When you rented a car, like this is my experience the weekend, is you have an argument with the lad about the credit card or the debit card. So you have to have a credit card to rent the car if anybody's rented a car. You can't block the money on a debit card. And I'm trying to say to the guy, so you want to put credit off me, which means that I probably don't have the money, but or real money, cash money, you can block the money. Not a chance. Got me, he did. 25 quid a day insurance if you don't have a credit card. And he's like, everyone's like, why don't you have a credit card? You're like, who the fuck give me a credit card? You know what I mean? Probably the best reason I don't have a credit card anyway, because I've just been playing shopping online all the time, spending all the money that I don't have. Yeah. Oh, trying to get a bailout with Leo and the lads.
The best thing about renting a car is the moment you leave it back in the airport, just the relief. You can relax.
I didn't get that that luxury, Robin, because of course my flight was at like 10 to 10, and I decided to go up. Jazz group at 9. Right. Forgot how far the airport now was away. So Nate had to scull me along. So you know, Nate Henry, amateur fighter, European fighter, fights out here. Absolute credible dude as well. You're gonna hear him in the future. He dropped me out to the airport. He did this morning, right? Pulls up at the door. He did. So to throw me out at the door of the airport and sort the car. No, so he went and sorted that. And we know he had to sort that car and then go rent a new car for himself. So I'm sure Nate had to deal with all of that madness going on as well.
Shout out to Nate.
Yeah, shout out to Nate. Nate actually did. So we get to the championship. So how the IMAF championships works now is that this is incredible. This is the first time I've got to go. As I said, I'm on the coaching squad now, and it was great to. The main thing is about blending this all together. Now, in reality to it, it wasn't a great showing for the Irish medals wise, but there was tough fights out there. Like, what we're going against. So some of the Russian lads and the Bar Russians, that's what some of the boys were calling them. So the Bahrainians and the Russians as well. So the Prince of Bahrain even came to see it. Like, you see how much respect the guys have for this guy. But what they do is they pay the fighters. So some of the fighters that are competing in this, their country is getting behind them and they're putting money into them as like wages. So some of these amateur fighters probably never turn professional because they'll make more money doing amateur. So how the amateur works is, if you're not familiar with it, is it's not like the UFC, so it's not like professional MMA. If you look at professional MMA is entertainment. That's the aspect of it. With this, it's a lot more. There's a lot more respect and humility in it, and the idea of representing your country and stuff like that. That's what really, really fluttered my eyelids at it. So, when you go out, a few days before. I've never seen a competition being ran as smoothly as this. So you have Mark Goddard, the referee, which he's running all the officials. But it doesn't only give us a chance to fight. It gives us a chance to grow officials, grow referees, grow what's happening with the judging system and stuff like this, because the judges need more practice as well in all sports, I think. Here's a good idea. You don't really do a rail meeting, Robin. Shouldn't they do a judges meeting where the judges meet the fighters and tell them what they're looking for?
The judges meet the fighters, and do they not do that? No?
No. So you're kind of guessing what the person's looking for. So if you're in there and it's like, right, I'll take the guy down, you think that would score, but sometimes it doesn't. Sometimes there was a few weird ones there.
Contentious.
A few weird ones there was. There was actually a situation and it was handled brilliant, perfectly. So one of my guys was going against Mexico, and to be fair, the Mexican kid was winning. It was really, really good. Strong, obviously, heart of a Mexican as well. But one of my guys threw a knee, and the knee went up and hit him in the head, right? And the ref went, stop! And as the ref was saying, stop, the guy was throwing a right hand, right? And he hit my guy with the right hand then. Now, my guy got dropped, couldn't continue. Now, we were in a situation, now I have to say, Mark Goddard handled it brilliant. At the time, obviously, yeah, I won't say, I actually handled it well myself, I wasn't too emotional about it. But what happened was that the ref had kind of told me what was going to happen, and then that didn't happen. Well, that shouldn't have happened either, but as I said, this is a great thing for everyone to get to practice the idea even of these situations happening, because this is a funky one. There's been a foul, and then all of a sudden, there's another foul involved in that. So usually what would happen is that if you kick somebody in the balls and they couldn't continue, you get disqualified because you created the foul. Yeah, that's my understanding of it. But if you kick somebody in the balls and in between that, they do a foul straight back to you, kind of puts it up in the air where the other person now is creating the foul, so they get disqualified. Now, we look back at the footage probably about 100 times, but my Dublin accent nearly got me into trouble because I shit myself, right? Mark Goddard comes down to me and goes, come here. I'm like, oh, shit. You know what I mean? Ref, so refs still have that. Refs still have that effect on you. But the ref says, "So wasn't me, ref."
Don't send me off.
No, stay around, ref. You know what I mean? He's like, "I didn't even say you did that." No, no, but what did they want, ref? but he brought me down and he says, "You're telling the fighter to knee him in the head," and I was like, "No, I wasn't." And I was convinced, like, and I was like, fuck, maybe I was, like, maybe it was just one of them things in the accident. Because, like, sometimes you'll say left hand, you're like, no, right hand, when you're doing corner. So, and then he brings me down and he has me listening to it. And he's watching the fight. And what I was at the telling him, because the Mexican lad's a lot smaller than Keane T. And I was telling him, like, lean on his head. All right, so when he comes in, lean on his head, be heavy. And he asked me to listen to it. And I was like, wait there. And I was like, phew, thank God I didn't say it. I was like, no, I was lean on his head. And he's like, no, it doesn't say that. He winds back and he's like, now, Mark O'Neill is Scottish as well. So.
Is he Scottish?
Yeah, he's Scottish, yeah.
I thought he was English.
See on the inside of his arm, no, Scottish. Oh, yeah. Like, you know what England do. Someone's doing well, they claim them. So, and then I had to explain that to him, and he was like, you want to see it? Oh, yeah. So, but what did happen anyway was my guy wouldn't have been able to continue because he got medical suspension. So, if you get hurt where the doctor, you can't continue, you're going to get a medical suspension. Now, the way this tournament works, it's a 5-day tournament. So, you weigh in the morning every single day and you fight in a knockout kind of, and it's like Kumite, if you know, it's a knockout in a way. So if you get knocked out, you don't come back the next day. So you're kind of supporting your team then if you get knocked out. So it's a long road for people to be doing it, and it's great. The next one is the cadets now. So the cadets, which is there's no headshots. So it's like the kids' version of it now. So there's no headshots, just body shots, grappling, takedown, walk against the fence. I think this is going to be the real start to MMA becoming the skilled that it should be. Now we look at fighters and obviously we think they're skilled, but I think in 10 years time after looking at this we're going to really see skilled fighters then. The timing and the execution of game plans, and we're going to see prints of gyms, so people that have this certain kind of style, like an art. The way I was explaining it the weekend was that it's like Formula 1 in a way. I was right even saying this, it worked. And I explaining it was, does everyone get the same amount of fuel in Formula 1?
So their team basically decides how much fuel they want to put in at the start of the race. So they'll normally operate off two stop or three stop strategy. So okay, it's up to the team, but essentially, like, they can fill it up as many times.
Is it the same car?
I think Formula E, maybe they all have the same car. Formula One is different because all the cars have different engines, and obviously I think, I don't really follow it too much anymore, but I think McLaren is still very much...
I've never watched that about boring.
Yeah. I know Lewis Hamilton and... Yeah.
But
maybe
anyway,
we'll just cut that little bit out about the Formula 1.
Because what I'm saying about the Formula 1 was that I'm saying to people, right, everyone gets a car, the same car, the same fuel, and it's what you do with it that makes you the best. Same way with your body. Like, I would say everyone gets hands and legs and arms, but sometimes people don't. So in the situation, there was actually a great grappling match the weekend. You see that? Going with one leg, going with no legs, two of them grappling. Incredible.
Jesus. I didn't see that.
Yeah, there's no excuses when you see stuff like that. But anyway, I'm saying, so it's a skill. So we all get the same kind of hours in the day if you must. And now it's going to come down to what we're putting our time into. So we're going to see gyms that what they present when it comes to these championships and opens, which I think is going to be the change of the game, because people are actually going to see the development process, so not carbon copies of people. Because sometimes I think if you're a fighter, you can do really well at the start, but if you're clever, you don't really do well at the start, but you're picking up the skills and then you do really well and your longevity is there. I think if you're tough, just tough, that can last for a while, but sometimes it can go against you getting better skills with. So maybe these situations are going to make people realise that you have to get skills, because it's a 5-day event. There's another really good analogy that Dan Healy said. On the first day, he was kind of smelling people's breaths, because when you're cutting weight, you can get this little kind of like a gassy kind of toxic smell off your breath. And he said on the first day, he was like making a point of leaning in and smelling the breath. Now, you're allowed to be a little bit dehydrated, you know what I mean, to kind of make the weight. Because you see some lads every day skipping outside and all. I remember saying to myself, like, they're never going to last. So the guys are going to learn this going along, that you can't do that for 5 days in a row. It's ridiculous. And so he said to me then, on the second day, he said the first day there was about 20% of people that you could smell it off, which means that you're dehydrated, right? And then on the second day, he said that was probably only about 10% of the people. And then on the third day, that was none. So that shows you.
That's mad, isn't it?
Well, it's a great way of looking at it rather than just fighting. Yeah. Is it working? Let's put a big group of people together, loads of people together, and start doing these like little tests if you must. So this is where I think it's going to benefit even more. So there's another one in Bahrain now coming up soon, but the setup is second to none. Three big cages set up. You make the walk. There's no music or anything like that. But you've got shin pads on and you've got big Spartan MMA gloves. So you get all your gear and all over there. So you get a red corner and a blue corner. You check your gear in. You take your gear back out the next day. Everyone's there at 8 o'clock in the morning. I think it's actually had to put me onto it. I'm normal again. I get up at 8 o'clock in the morning now and I'm going to go sleep early at night. Where I don't know about you, but I'm a late night kind of guy, you know what I mean?
Yeah, I'm the same.
So now, the medal haul wasn't great for Ireland, but there was a little girl, Nadine, from Team Rhino. She made it to the final there. So yesterday, we were watching her in the final and it was amazing, really was. She narrowly missed out. She lost a decision. A lot of the fights as well that went to decisions, better off not to let them go to decisions, she'll say. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
This girl, she ended up getting silver in the end, and anyway. Some of the other guys that were already gold medalists and stuff like that, some of them came away with silver medals. So that's, it just keeps pushing the bar for people to get better.
Yeah. There was a great, I must say, the coverage, the online coverage was very good on their channels. They were updating the fights. You could watch them all live. I think 10 quid for the championship.
That's a steal. Yeah, two cups of coffee or something.
You pay
like
that for a fight. You pay that for one of the fights. So.
Absolutely. You swear you get paid off for something like this, having this conversation. Yeah. You don't get paid for this, by the way. No. People say to me, Judge, I have another job, but don't. It actually cost me money to go. So the call of people, it cost me €400 and me flights and accommodation and everything else in between that. Now, I got a pair of gloves and shin pads and all that, which was great. Pounced down, and your man's like, you're not an amateur. Give him an old set of gloves there. Yeah, and he hooked me up and all he did. Like, you sly rat. Now I have middleweight shorts, right? And super small tops. So it's all right. Anyone want to buy a few tops?
Yeah.
one of my old lads, so Nate and Henry, we got straight away, he got drawn. The pound for pound Canadian number one guy, amateur. So this guy is 16 and all he was. A wrestler. And they had seen him in Bahrain, in the world championships. And he said, this guy literally just ran through some. So this guy's a current world champion, he was, gold medalist. And it goes to show that anything can happen in this game. So this, and the seeding process counts. You start seeing how that works then. So Nate went there and get this guy, Canadian guy, probably the nicest guy I've ever met in my whole life as well.
They always are, Canadians.
Always are, aren't they? Like, they like to talk about. went out, the plan was, listen, he's going to take you down. So if you don't plan for these things and you just get annoyed when it does go wrong, you're kind of fucked. So the idea was to just, let's hit him with 200 shots from the bottom. So he doesn't hit, he hits you in guard, or he just sort of sits in your guard a little bit. You know what I mean? So the idea was to close the guard and just bash him from the bottom. You know what I mean? Yeah. And it was working. It started working straight away. So I think if someone's just taking you down, The takedown shouldn't count as much as 200 punches to the face from the bomb.
No.
Do you know what I mean? Slaps on the ears and stuff like that. I'm actually going to teach the game plan that we used for this guy. So slapping the ears and stuff like that from on the bomb, and then there's a thing I use from switch. So there's a tool I'm going to show to the team, and hopefully we start using it soon, right? It's a switch from guard, it's called. I never really see anybody use it. Never. I have to give credit. Great name, Paul Rimmer over in Next Generation. We were training over there one night. I wasn't going to go to the jiu-jitsu class in the evening because I'd been there for the day, and I went, and I remember he showed me half of this thing and I ended up adding more on myself, but he was the responsibility of the seed being planted. So I'm going to try and introduce this tool to the team over the next little while. Still a young team, very young team, but it's a way of getting up from guard when somebody's just trying to squash you. So the idea with Nate beating this guy up, Nate got to, they using this system that I'm talking about here, when you start getting up, it involves locking down the shoulder and the arm, and when they kind of start messing with it, the guy's shoulder, you can see it like popped, all right? And you can see it straight away happening. So the guy went back to his corner and you can see that shoulder's at the middle. Same again, Nate, because the first thing the guy did came out, didn't even like throw a jab, just level changed, and I mean power double, the guy kind of shooting through the air. With Nate, not one of these normal doubles where someone shoots in, it's like, oh, he should have sprawled on him. Trust me, we thought about this. And even when they got hit with the shot, I was like, holy shit, like, that was it. That was, there's nothing stopping, like, you sprawl, break it in half, like. So we looked over at the corner, and the guy's arm, he was holding a shoulder. You see a shoulder, mate? It's not real tight shoulders and stuff like this guy. So then the next thing came out, guy came out, exact same thing, shot in, took Nate down, ended up in guard. The idea of beating him up, but attacking a little bit more now. And then I think it was, he set up, put the hand through the leg for the switch, and then this guy just starts screaming, Robin. Right? Were you watching the fight?
Yeah, yeah, I watched it at work.
Was everyone,
I watched it on my lunch break.
Was everybody a bit weirded out by how?
You couldn't hear on the...
No, this guy was screaming. Really? Right? And not only that, Nate was like a bleeding...
sportsmanship.
Like a, yeah, and a Dover man and a St. Bernard, I was saying to him, he breaks the guy's shoulder off and then runs for help. I tell him to go away from the corner because he's holding the guy's arm. He's like, doctor, come on, bring him a beer and all this. He's like, I'll do it, I'll put it back in. I'm like, Nate, just leave him alone. I was afraid that he'd probably sue me. Yeah. You know, like, you just don't know.
I was laughing at that. I've seen that, like, but it's sums Nate up, doesn't it?
Absolutely, that's, yeah, but that's a great thing about this, because there's loads of, you see it, all the teams sitting together. It's great humility. someone was saying about the idea of other teams even helping some of the poorer countries out in it, because when you start making prices in something like this, that's an international organisation, each country's that different, you know what I mean? So you could be putting this somewhere in there. I think, I don't know whether it was Cuba or something like that, but they were saying, like, that money there could buy a house. Do you know what I mean? So some countries, it'll be buttons, and some of the other countries are like, don't worry, we'll sort that out.
That's brilliant.
Amazing,
isn't it? It's great to see.
And the reason is because they need people to fight against. So they need to keep growing this scene and developing this up, because everyone needs teammates, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Or not teammates, sorry, teams to fight against.
Yeah.
You want to be fighting the best as well. Yeah. One of the guys doing a talk that won a gold medal actually mentioned the Irish is one of the toughest. He's like, we've got the tough guys out here, we've got the Ireland, we've got group over here. That's what I was saying. But the Russians and the Bahrainians, I think, dominated this time. But a lot of the stuff was just the same. It was level change, take the person down, beat them up a little bit. Now they did it to a high level, you know what I mean? But that's, I think going forward, that's what has to be in the future, you know what I mean?
Yeah, there seemed to be a lot of, from watching the fights, seemed to be a lot of, like, wrestling and takedown and just, like, muscle.
Makes people appreciate it. Because I always say to people, from the ground up, I think if you understand that, it's not worse than someone wrestling you. It's a horrible way to lose.
It wasn't a tournament for the stand-up, definitely. There's one great picture. Well, it was just a screenshot. I love this one here. Yeah. After that,
have a look at it though. How much does Phil look like Carr Frampton?
Yeah, a little bit. Yeah.
Someone texted on it and I was like, holy shit, he looks like Carr Frampton, doesn't he? Doesn't he? I don't know what's going on here.
I thought it was a great picture, right? Because it reminds me of, I'll see if we can get here. Do you know Rocky?
One day we had it. We had 18 fighters on, Robin.
That was the first day, was it?
So, yeah, so it's Andy Ryan, Andy Ryan, Liam O'Griffin, and Barry Oaksby, and Dino Wade. Philip Mulpeter as well was over there as well, with the team.
It was great to see Phil there.
It's really cool. We got tracksuits a lot this time. Last time we hadn't got tracksuits.
Did you keep them?
Yeah, it was actually Philip Mulpeter that I think sorted out the tracksuits, but they were great tracksuits. I lost my hoodie on the first day.
Did you?
Yeah, I lost it on the first day. So that's how, and my credentials. You know what I mean? But when you hear this man's story, right? Lost my bank card. Could not find my bank card today. This happened today.
Today?
Right? I was in no taxis in Italy. Alright? And Philip Mulpeter's brother, Stu Mulpeter, gets into a taxi going home last night. And a fella turns around to a taxi driver in, like, the middle of Italy, or south of Italy. And goes, do you know Paddy Houlihan? Patrick Houlihan. He's like, yeah, he's like, there's his bank card.
No way.
And I'm walking through the airport today with a tenner in my pocket, panicking. Oh, jeez, no bank card now. And he goes, Phil, got your bank card off a taxi man last night. And he hands me back my bank card. Found its way back to him.
And was he over with the team or just on a separate?
No, he was fighting as well, yeah. Oh. He was doing really well, actually. He was doing really, really well. And then he shot in and got caught in a dash choke. He was at the win of the fourth round and all he did.
But, that's hilarious, isn't
these
it?
Things happened. These things happened. We ended up, so on the Sunday, the Saturday, I ticked off one of the boxes. I don't know if he's ever been, most people have been to Rome. We haven't. I've already passed through it. But I got to actually go up and have a look around Rome. My God. What a city. Now, in a way of, like, looking at it, Well, start off the Vatican. When you go up to the Vatican, it's like, well, look, I didn't realise that the Vatican's its own city and it has a flag. And I'm like,
it's a country, yeah?
Yeah, it's a country, like. I'm like, how is this even allowed? Do you know what I mean?
Money talks.
If they sold everything in that square, there'd be no more world hunger. There'd be no more homelessness. There'd be no more nothing. Yeah. These things is built like, it looked like you were built for gods or something like that.
It's a well-oiled machine.
Nothing is spared. Like, and then in between all of this, there's this woman, and I'm not messing, she had to be in the guts of 90, right? Probably 100. She was a tiny wee woman, right? Made of pasta, and she was going around with a cup collecting coins. And I just, my heart went out to her. It's like, at 100 years of age, 90 years of age, no one needs to be doing that. You know, and I just couldn't, these are the things I think about. This is how the podcast came about, because these are the things I think about. I'd sit that wee old woman down, I would, and have a conversation for about 90 hours with her. Do you know what I mean? But like, where does she go and sleep and all? Like, and what happens? Like, I don't know. It was just one of them things that really, really got to me, you know?
Yeah, no, it's sad. It's, yeah. It's
the Colosseum then. So it's something I've always wanted to go to. Always. If anybody's ever been there, you know what I'm talking about then. Absolute incredible it is. Now, the tour guide we got was a shy back. Alright? He was shy. Everything I asked him, every question, he said, maybe, probably, no evidence. But yeah, you could be right. Right? One thing I asked him, right, was, when it came to the end, look, this is how bad he was. He was describing the next guy that we had to see, right? Because we were coming back at 3:30 to do the next part of the tour. And he said that, how he described it was, the guy has a... Kind of like brown hair, kind of blondy brown hair, has blue eyes, is about 47, between 47 and 60, I'd say. I'm like, mate, this place is packed with people. And this is the directions he's given us to come back and find this lad. You know what I mean? And it turns out we didn't go and find the lad because I nearly melted in that Colosseum. But something that really struck me about that was that not many of the gladiators do it. Do you know what I mean?
Really?
Not many. Like, and the thing was, I was asking, like, were the rounds? Like, were the fights rounds?
Yeah.
And they kind of were. So in the morning, there'd be these hunting games on, where it would nearly look Natural Geographic. So very obviously really cruel towards animals. But in the time where people would have never seen these type of animals, and this is what they did, is they let them out into this and hunted them then. So the first of all was hunted, and that the kids and all were able to go and watch that. And then, like, free in as well. And yeah. the levels of class, of classism as well, was a huge thing there as well. So
we still would have been in the nosebleeds.
100%, yeah. And you know, the way it is, classism is another way of divide and conquer, in a way. Because when people obviously piss each other off, they start fighting amongst each other. But I'm trying to imagine what it'd be like on a full day in there. Like, you're talking about, this thing's like a Super Bowl stadium when you're in it. They have the floor level, but the floor actually thing is down. You can see into where all of the warm up areas, if you will. And I was explaining this to the boys, so the lads and girl who came with me, I've said to them, this is like, imagine sitting in there, right? But not only that, listening to the animals, listening to like lions roaring and the woods above you and the crowd and like. Like most gladiators were slaves as well. So you would fight to not get your slaves. But like in the film Gladiator, the Marcus Aurelius' son, which would be Pontius, I think his name was. And I'm asking him a guy about this guy, and he's like, oh no, I don't know. Oh, you could have been about a tour guide to this lad over there, yeah?
You took over, did you?
Yeah. And I'm like, give me that blade, Mike. You know what I mean? Pedre, take a break. Irish tour guides, we should pat ourselves on the back. We're bleeding PhDs in this stuff.
We know our stuff.
Yeah, and the boys all excited and all. This guy looked like he was at a funeral. Now, that let me down. That was the only thing that let me down. But then the idea of just walking into it, there's this energy in it as well. This mad energy of like, I don't know, I just love to fight there, I would. You know, you can imagine people going in there to fight to the death, and this energy like overwhelming you to nearly mob mentality and put you into that craziness, you know what I mean?
That's the thing about a lot of these places when you get there. You can sense the energy. You can nearly sense what's come before it.
Kilmainham's like that.
Yeah. Ooh, there's crazy. Something, there's just something like, there's an eerie silence about the place. I don't know what it is, but you can't put your finger on it, but you can nearly visualise and picture what's gone before. You can just, there's a presence there. There definitely is.
Yeah, and I don't. And you know, you say to yourself, you don't believe. Like, you don't believe in all, like, energies or gods or that and that. Like, but yeah, this was at a time where, like, and this is how. Remember, we did the. If you haven't seen the podcast, another podcast on religion about the Romans taking over. The Roman takeover. Remember
the hooligan of Assisi.
The hooligan of Assisi. With that's Dino. What it's called, isn't it? Yeah. Yeah. I love Assisi. That's the last time I was in Italy. But every time I go back, I always learn something bad about it. But there was a time where Christianity and paganism was together. So at a time where you could be worshipping Odin and Thor and all these guys, and then they start making Christianity. And then Christianity, I only found out at this time, was made illegal to be a pagan. And it was punishable. Really? There was three ways to die. Right, one of them was crucifixion, one of them was being boiled to death,
Jesus,
and one of them was being torn apart by wild beasts.
Did you get to pick?
Oh, I don't think so. I think they picked for you. How could you pick something like that? You're like, eeny, meeny, miny, you know what I mean? And another thing as well, even though the emperor, some of the crazy fights, say some of the big fights, the emperor would give the yay or the nay. Yeah. Right? And it turns out the thumb thing is the opposite way around.
Really?
That's what they were saying to me, yeah? They were saying, so when it was down, it meant he actually lived. And when it was to kill him, you were saying, yeah, kill him. I was like, that actually makes sense. This means don't kill him. This means kill him.
That could be confusing. Very definitely one or two.
Kill him or not kill him. Make your bleeding mind. You know what I mean? Just hold up a sign the next time. Yes, no. But it would have, not only was it the emperor that would have been chosen, is it would have been the Blessed Virgins, is what they were. So, and you want to see the house these lads lived in? Well, lads, shame me. Girls lived in.
The Blessed Virgins. The
Blessed Virgins, that's what they were, yeah. Here you go now for a bit of brekkie. But this gaff was absolutely, you want to see this thing. And another one of the emperors that built it when you're coming in, no one needs a house as big as this lad. This thing was massive, it was. You can just imagine him sitting in his box bedroom in it on his own and just like acres. I think it was like 1,800 hectares or something like that. The gaff was. Like, mad numbers. And when you're coming in, you can see why. Your man said it, it's like, how big is that? And he knew he was going to throw out a big, huge number that I'd never heard before. And he wasn't even using the acres, he was using the hectares.
Oh my God.
But the guy pointy is anyway, so from Gladia, going back around, I think I've worked this out before. When he became the emperor, when his dad, Marcus Aurelius, died, so like in Gladia film, he had never really been a battle or anything like that. So nobody really trusted him. Nobody liked kind of the idea of him becoming the emperor because he didn't really know what he was talking about. And Marcus Aurelius was at the being this incredible leader that had, like, not only just conquered a lot of places, but brought a lot of peace to places and stuff like that. He kind of did the effect of, like, Britain's making of the modern world, in a way. But he did it in a way where people were learning technology and food and health and all that stuff was getting better when he was going through. So when he died, his son took over, but his son was kind of like a little bit of a party boy. So you think, like, some big businessman now or something like that, some lad that's loaded, his kid growing up and never really having any kind of understanding of it. And then he owns, like, everything. I own everything.
Nice.
Yeah, he was the original Mufasa. You know, where he was like, everything the light touches. He literally could look out the window and say that.
That's dead.
So, yeah. But the thing was, he made this little scam up, he did, Robin, about fighting gladiators. So what he used to do is he used to starve them. And not only that, he used to blunt their blades and break their shields. So he'd make these, like, big gladiators that, like, people knew were good gladiators. And what he'd do is he'd weaken them into a terrible house estate. So you see it in Gladiator when he stabs him. Yeah, so that's true. But what happens is that he killed these gladiators, and all of a sudden his fame started to rise up.
Padding his record.
And to be seen to show mercy, like, you would think back in that time would be bad.
Yeah.
But it's actually good. So showing mercy would have got you the crowd. Crowd came with you, you know what I mean? Now, you can just imagine if someone didn't like it and you were in there, you're like, this better lock him down to a decision. We're going to get lashed out of it.
It's funny how some things never change, isn't it?
Sorry?
It's funny how some things never change.
That is crazy. And if you've never read a book called Memoirs from Marcus Aurelius, so it's literally, it's his writings.
Yeah.
And you could just stick it into a bookshelf now and it would just be like 2019.
Yeah.
A lot of the stuff in it, we can actually learn from it. A lot of the stuff is about people that are, like, weaker minded than you, or people that are in a less, let's say, financial situation or even intelligent situation and stuff like that. If you slag that person, there's something wrong with you.
Really?
You put yourself under that a little bit. You know know what I mean? So it's crazy weird.
Yeah. Do you know what we heard with the Coliseum, that they used to fill it up with water and put boats in and have like water battles? Because that's what they did, wasn't it? They used to recreate famous victories and stuff.
Yes. Yeah.
That's in the movie as well, they touch on that. But yeah, according to Wikipedia, it's true. I don't know what your tour guide might say. But he wouldn't know anyway.
He would say, maybe, possible, no evidence.
But yeah, they used to fill the place with water and turn it into a swimming pool, essentially, and then put boats in and recreate the... Yeah. Here's
they probably thought that up, and then a lot of slaves had to make it happen.
Yeah. That's always the way. That's still the way it is.
I might have heard that chap wrong, right? I don't know how long, but I think it took 8 years to build.
Really?
That's like,
good.
If you're building that now, you wouldn't be getting it done in 8 years.
They're redoing it as well, aren't they?
Radgard and the boys talking about can't get houses built. These boys building fucking coliseums.
Yeah.
In 8 years.
Just goes to show, doesn't
get
it?
Get it done. Speaking of the boys, do you know how weird they're at the deal now?
No.
They're at the deal with the dirty. So they're all about this climate change and stuff like this, and then they gave one of the biggest polluters permission today to drill off the Kerry coast now for potentially oil, a Chinese company called China Drill or something like that, I think it's called. But they're one of the biggest polluters in the world. So on one hand, they're like, no more dust, we're over here protecting the planet. And then on the other side of it, they're giving out contracts to people that are known as huge pollutions. So why are we drilling for the bleeding oil? Because there's no doubt if China find it, probably just take it if they want art. Well, somebody be getting a grease for it, but like, how are we still doing these stupid things?
It's madness.
It's like, we're in a situation, right, where it's starting to turn into like nearly like a dictatorship if you must. Because a democratic society means that we make the decisions. They go do it. But wait, I'm one of them, but no, not one of them ever put me in that category. We make the decisions, and they go and do it. And that's what they do. And that's what being a good leader is, because he gets the stuff done. Now it's in a situation where they just make huge decisions about, like, huge financial decisions that my money's going to pay, your money's going to pay, listeners' money's going to pay as tax people. And they're making decisions with their money and what they're going to do. Like, we should be voting on these things.
Yeah.
Now, all the referendums that passed are very, very, very important. But there's a lot of shit going down where, like, I think changing something to that, where we make decisions when it's coming down to money. Because if it goes over €1 billion, that there has to be some sort of way of being able to put an input into it. You know what I mean? Not these vote things, they are standing, someone standing outside. Did you ever hear these votes? They stand in people's houses in the States when they go out to vote and ask them if they're going to vote. But anyway, so it's like a survey, and they figure out about the people. Anyone ever read or question them surveys?
No, sorry, I do see them, yeah, they're pain in the ass.
I mean, the traffic and all of the mornings, they be saying, where you going, what time did you go up, or whatever, trying to figure out stuff like.
They're even in the airport sometimes.
Yeah, look, we should be able to, like, you know, log on to something or something like that, scan our ID, and, like, every now and again, we all vote towards what's going on.
I always think this information it goes back to the government, they're like, oh, it's an independent survey, but it's going to be used against you someday.
Absolutely. It's like sales and marketing, if you must.
Even like the likes of your TV license, for example. If you don't pay that, and then when these people come to the door and they ask how many people's in the house, how many TVs you have, all this stuff. And if you're on a list that you haven't paid it, then they have this information on you all of a sudden. Because that's the thing with the TV license. If they send you a letter and your name isn't on the letter, then they don't know who you are. So in theory, they can't do anything. But they do these surveys. They find out where you're living. They get your name. They find out how many TVs you have in your gaff. Someone's going to sell that information to someone.
It's on TV, man.
So they can get their life. I'm convinced that's what it is. If any of these people call around, just close the door. In a nice way.
Slap the door.
Here's the thing, right? Your Coliseum thing gave me this idea the other day. And if it's a good idea, maybe we'll just cut it out of the podcast, and maybe you and me can go and get cracking on it.
Don't rub it. That's what he said.
This is it. Just what you were saying about being able to visualise and picture everything. I had this idea. The way technology's gone, you've heard of augmented reality. So there's 3D goggles that you put on and you can see everything. But there's other headsets and eyepieces that you can put on where the graphics are overlaid on real life. So say I wear an eyepiece now, and that wall turns into, there's a picture or there's a TV on that wall, and we can watch it and we can move it around. And it's kind of like Minority Report. Do you know the way you can just move everything around? Like, what if, like, you applied that technology to history, for example? So say you go into the Colosseum and you put on an eyepiece.
Deadly.
And the crowd are there, and like the gladiators are there. So the tour guide's talking about it and you can see everything. But also you have, like, because you're there, you have the heat and the scent and the smell and the atmosphere of the
place. Yeah.
You could just bring it to life. Imagine doing that with Khomeini in jail. Imagine doing that with the GPO. It would work anywhere.
Yeah, people just walking around with it.
Yeah, yeah. And it just savage. All comes back all to life. Yeah.
Be all over going to something like that.
Which you want? I can give you some shares in the.
Yeah, some shares. Don't go robbing that idea, anybody. Yeah? Or if it's out there, let us know.
Give us credit.
Give us a little show for you something that's there. Not even credit, money, Robin. Yeah.
If anyone does anything with that idea, I fully expect them to sponsor the No Shame podcast.
I agree. One thing about being away as well, what I've noticed is, oh man, we're being fucked over here. We are. Everything. Price now, apart from fuel was a mental price over there. I don't know how them boys are doing, like 170 or 180 or something like that for a thing of diesel, litre of diesel.
That's madness.
Mental. Homelessness, all of these things. When you're away, you notice how much that we actually accept. We've probably seen 2 homeless people in a week. I mean, and that was in Rome and the other side as well. Doesn't look like there's any homelessness. And the idea of looking into our country and looking into the way they build in other countries, what dope's like. Build like little small bungalows in a way. Like these are building, I won't say big sky great builders, but you could just know that each square was getting so many people into it. And people are living in like gated complexes where one building would have a gate into it and there could be 50 people in it. Do you get what I mean? Yeah. So like, rather than building up a big huge, we had lots of these, so building up a little bit more and having these things, they seemed like it was working. And then you come back to Dublin, have to say, get a lot of play, it was lovely, love a bit of Dublin. I hadn't got a cup of tea for a whole week either.
What was that like?
Mental. I was hallucinating and all. No, I was, I got one on the plane and it was gorgeous, it was. I started dropping that one there as well. Now the plane, I don't think it was Lloyd's either. Do you know Lloyd's? Does Ryanair do Lloyd's? Is it?
I don't. I wouldn't say so. It's too expensive for Ryanair.
Yeah, no, I would say so.
They probably use the Aldi version. What's it called? Lloyd's or something like
Lloyd's,
that?
Lloyd's, yeah. Lloyd's
Day, yeah. That's what it is. You ever see Aldi just rip off like everyone's brand?
The campus of the blue plane for 40 minutes, locked up on the doors, 40 minutes. It was like being in a sardine can, it was. 40 degrees, roasted. I'm panicking to your woman saying, I'm too ginger for this. Not a hope. You need to get me off this blue plane.
I literally straight off the plane and into the studio to record this episode.
No stopping me.
Fair play. What about the sort of main talking point of the weekend?
Absolute cracker.
Listen, the GOAT.
So, the GOAT, yeah. So the Russian helmet goes and smashes Paddy Maganagy. And not only that, smashes him to a way where he cut him 3 times. Now, this is my reaction to when Paddy said, I only got hit once. You would have had to go to the bag of a rake, mate, to have that many holes in your face after getting hit once. So,
yeah.
A good box in the mouth, I thought was going to sort them out, but it looks like it didn't. Even the way, Arthur was so respectful to him after it. So really respectful after it. And then all of a sudden, Paddy Maganagy kind of starts, discrediting. I feel I should have won. Bullshit.
Making excuses.
Do you know what? If you want it, you could see the fear in his face, couldn't you?
Yeah.
He was shitting himself getting in there. And Arthur was stone cold. Like, I don't even know, it looked like Arthur was frozen at one time. He just stone cold. But, smashed him. Literally brought it straight to him and smashed him. Paddy was going on about, say, the boxing fans and stuff like that, saying, shouldn't do it, and, you shouldn't bow down to that level and all this. And this is
very disrespectful.
Very disrespectful. Paddy's saying about, MMA fans, was he saying that much lower level or something like that?
Yeah, he was comparing them to WWE fans, WrestleMania.
It goes to show, when he was saying that stuff, it goes to, I have kids here that would absolutely smoke him when it comes to grappling and it comes to anything like that. And to stand on that curve and just be that little bit disrespectful. I'm a fan of all of them. I'm a fan of, I watch boxing, I watch all of it. If it's fight, I'm watching it.
Yeah, of course.
And the idea of that boxing is the sort that we were only using our hands. But that doesn't mean that when somebody's using their feet that you can have a like a credited account. Yeah, but that's shit. That's less than boxing. Because that'd be the same way someone talking about boxing when you're only using your hands. If you use them for so long, you're going to get really, really good at it. But the idea of someone being a kickboxer then or being a jiu-jitsu guy, how could somebody like Paulie Maganazzi make a bleed there? An answer on that. He actually looks a bit like Artem there, doesn't he?
A little bit, yeah. He looks good. He looks good.
Bear his face onto him.
It's an improvement.
Yeah, it's an improvement. At least he'll be able to probably, yeah.
The thing is, yeah, he did say that.
Pays bills now.
He did say that he was very disrespectful to the fans. He said it was beneath him. It's everything. Artem was on this podcast a few weeks ago and he said boxers have this attitude towards this sport. And he ticked all those boxes. He said everything that Artem said a few weeks ago, like in terms of what he thinks of the sport. And I think Artem just had his number. And the fight didn't even go the way everyone expected it to go because for some weird reason, the referee was breaking the clinch. I thought very...
Absolutely. He was breaking it like boxing.
Yeah.
He was breaking it like remember the one with Ricky Hatton and Floyd Mayweather? Like, yeah, that's... You have to be watching this stuff, you know what I mean? And is this someone just pissing him out because like it didn't go their way and he couldn't manipulate it their way or something like that, you know what I mean? Like he said that, like he'll never do it again. He's going back to boxing or he's going back to just being in retirement and something like that. Don't blame you. Like, yeah. Don't blame you. So who thinks now? Conor smashed his face in a
Yeah. I think a lot of people now are starting to believe Conor a little bit more.
The only props I'll ever get Paulie Maganazzi is he talked himself into a few quid.
Yeah, he showed up.
Do you know what I mean? And he showed up, yeah. A lot of people talk about it and he showed up.
Do you know what I think? A lot of people say about him that know him, that he's a really nice guy. I think he's clearly trying to sell a fight and he's gone too far in what he's done. But I think he was trying to get into Artem's head the whole way through. You just can't. You can't get into Artem's head. He doesn't do mind games, does he?
He tells you what's going to happen, what he's going to throw, where it's going to go. And that's it. That's what he was saying on the show here as well. Do you know what I mean? Bellator as well the weekend, wasn't it? And UFC.
Yeah, Bellator and UFC. So Bellator London, James Galler was...
Yeah, James Galler, 22-year-old, you're hoping to go in there doing a main event
against a black belt.
You know what I mean? So wait, what's he now? James 9-1 now, I think.
9-1, yeah.
9-1. So I'd say there's a big test around the corner. There has to be a big test around the corner still for him. You know what I mean?
I
think he's more than capable of a big test. You know, adding off Jordy Shore as well, aren't they? Jordy Shore, lad.
Yeah, he got his win back
after a loss. So, we don't know.
On the ground as well.
You have to give it to him, don't you? I didn't see that one. I have to say, I didn't see that fight. Didn't see that. And then Molly McCann as well.
Meatball,
yeah, she's sound. She is.
What a legend.
And she was poking the hell out of your woman. And the idea of some of the shots she was landing when I was watching it, people hate watching fights with me because I can't stop talking about it. It's like I'm analysing them or something like that.
You're in the fight.
I'm in the fight. I'm like, sure, I fucking need to be doing that. But like, Molly, banging with a left hook. And the girl kind of walking and getting caught with it. Not dealing with the one thing at a time, you know what I mean? But the fair place to Molly, like, the respect she even gave her in as well. Yeah, she's a good scrapper, she is. The thing about Bellator, though, look, and I never really say that. I don't bother with it, with saying stuff like that. But there was a post about the Bellator event in September coming up, and they used a UFC Dublin picture, if you have a look at it. If you go to the screen, it's the UFC canvas actually on the screen. So the time that the UFC, the arena was full to the brim, at that time, they actually used that picture for it, which was probably fair game, if you must, you know what I mean? But I'm sure if the UFC fucking find that they'd be going mental, do you mean? Because would they own the image?
Huh?
Would they own the image, do you think?
Oh, 100%. That's suicide. You can't do that. If the UFC haven't seen it, which they probably have, there's going to be war over that.
That's clearly UFC Dublin. It's an advertisement. Yeah, you know what I mean?
They've used their content to promote, and they're pretty, they don't like each other anyway.
Like, I think it was Lee McCourt that actually stuck up the post.
Oh, yeah.
That's what he said. It was actually, I don't really write back the thing. Like, Twitter's a whole new world, isn't it?
Twitter or Instagram?
No, it wasn't. It was on
Twitter.
It's kind of died down a little Twitter's one of them places where like people are just ruthless on ruthless, like
trolls is what they call them,
but there's no space for it, isn't there?
No, not at all.
So, I mean, not a smashing fighter as well. We had Leo, didn't we?
Yeah, Leo was on one of the earlier episodes, actually. If you haven't seen that, check it out.
It's Leo, isn't it?
Leah.
Yeah. I was saying Leah.
You were calling her Lee for that whole episode.
No, here we go again. Listen.
And then I called her Leah, and you were like, no, it's Lee. And I was like, oh my God, this is so embarrassing.
Yeah, no. We're the worst at that, like that. Yeah. To see that the podcast had to blow up so much and go so well. Well, I won't say I'm shocked at it, but could be a little bit shocked because it's a crazy thing to do, kind of put yourself out there. That turns out, I think we're doing all right, Rob.
Yeah, we're going good.
Do you know what I love about? I love when, say, we get somebody on, and I constantly get the same message back. And there's such a variety because very rarely people come back and say, I love this one. Like, some people will just put a random episode out and be like,
yeah,
this was brilliant. This was this. You know, he said this, and I'd be even thinking, Jesus, it actually was a good episode.
Usually always somebody every week, and they say that's my favourite one, or that's your best one yet. And it's not a. Is this it here?
Is this it here? Yeah, click into it.
Yeah. That's crazy. We'll put that up on the podcast for anybody watching on YouTube.
That's a bit mental, isn't it?
Yeah. That's madness.
But is it Bellator or is it a different website to put the picture up?
So no, it's fightpost.co.uk.
You need to get your shit together, mate.
Bellator MMA. So it isn't actually Bellator.
What?
It isn't actually Bellator that put it up. It's another website. So
he needs to get himself together because it'd be the equivalent of bleeding.
Yeah, you don't do that. I mean, that's just look at that. Look at that crowd.
It's Manchester United, Liverpool, though, isn't it? That thing, that place. That tree arena when it's full up to the brim like that's mental. I think September. But even saying that the Bellator show in September, good card coming on that. I reckon they could do that. They could bang up that.
Definitely. It went so well last time and people weren't really knowing what to expect.
I think it's a good thing to have it in town.
A lot of good
fighters. And you know, there's no big shows that come in like that anymore now. You know what I mean? Unfortunately, it just doesn't work like that. When there used to be a time in the game where there was a show on every single weekend, it was like if you the Coliseum, if you must. So they, like, a lot of people, some people don't know, but not a lot of people. All the other Coliseums were like little, there's a, I don't know what you'd call Coliseums, it'd be like arenas, gladiator arenas. And I remember being at one in Jordan, and just a little small arena, so like where they'd fight, sword fight and stuff like that, and people would die in it as well. But then the idea would be to make it to the UFC, which would be the Coliseum in Rome. And you could just imagine walking up that strip in Rome, and it just appeared in itself. At that time, there would have never been art like it. Like, you're flying over on the plane, and you can see it.
Really?
Like, can you see it from the moon?
The Colosseum?
Yeah.
No. The only thing you can see from space is the Great Wall of China.
Speaking of bleeding space.
A few other objects.
What's the story with your man Joe Rogan had on the other day?
Oh my God. Bob Lazar, did you watch it?
Yeah. Like, yeah, I just know I was going out the door.
Mind blowing. Have you seen the documentary?
No.
So this is how Joe Rogan first heard of it. There was a documentary on Netflix.
I probably have seen it when you start describing it. Was it about an alien?
I haven't watched it yet. I listened to the Joe Rogan podcast.
I say Bob Lazar.
Bob Lazar. And I'm definitely gonna watch that tonight, maybe, or not tonight, I'm editing this maybe.
Yeah, if you haven't seen that one, this is mental, make sure you go and watch it.
Everything you've heard, all the stories about Roswell, Area 51, all the like stereotypical alien images, like you think if there ever was aliens, they wouldn't look like the little man with the big head and the big massive gooey eyes. Like, you're like, no, that's not. Bob Lazar is on this episode and he's saying, no, that's what they do look like. They are this size. They do travel in flying saucers. We have the technology. I've looked at it. It's all true.
You said there's like an orb there or something like that can create gravity.
Yeah, there's an orb that creates gravity and then everything just powers up and there's no wires.
There's no wires at all. Yeah. Like that, yeah.
And the thing is, he's telling his story. So he was saying all of this in the 80s and he said there's one element that didn't exist. They said it doesn't exist. And he said in the 80s, no, it does exist. I was working in... in, it wasn't Area 51, it was another site off, but it was basically Area 51. And he said, there's this element on the periodic table that isn't supposed to exist, but it actually does. I've seen it. I can prove it. And they're like, no, it's not true. And then in 2004, maybe, that element was discovered. And it was proven to exist. So he said this in the 80s, and no, everyone was like, nah, that's not true.
They probably hadn't studied enough of it.
Yeah. So then they discovered it. So he's saying this back then, and they're talking about all this on the podcast. It's mind-blowing. It's just mind-blowing. I think Bob put it best. He said it's like, it'd be like taking nuclear energy and like the atomic bomb and all that and putting it back in the Victorian age. And they'd be looking, scientists then would be looking at it and they wouldn't be able to figure out, and they'd be thinking like, this is magic. He said that's what it was like for him when he was working on this technology. He honestly could not figure out anything. Like they said it was, he said it was the best experience and the scariest experience because they were so far out of their depth in that they just couldn't figure out.
You're talking about like the planet's like best scientist here.
Yeah.
But he said something about, and this is what they think was, he said there was an American flag on one of the flying saucers.
Yeah, well, they probably just, that's America, isn't it?
America.
Yeah, it's like, that reminds me of one time years ago, we used to have a dog called Buddy. Golden Labrador, yeah. He was like, he's gone now, long time ago. Yeah. R.I.P. Buddy.
No, it is sad, man. Listen, though, we lost a dog and I tried a cousin for that dog.
Yeah. But he was useless. He got catching anything. But a cat caught a bird one time, was going through the garden, and my dog chased the bird away. He chased the cat away. The cat dropped the bird. But my dog's looking around and he picks up the bird and just leaves it on my doorstep. It's like he caught it. Do you know what I mean? He just claimed it.
Yeah.
But that's kind of what it's like with the Americans. They find this flying saucer just, and they're looking around, and then they stick an American flag on it.
I was watching something about false flags.
Yeah.
In a way. So if a false flag is a country will create, if you don't know, let me talk to you like a dope, but you know what it is, yeah. Because some people, company will create, say, a bomb somewhere. There's actually there was documents found about they were going to go to, was a Cuba at the time. And they were going to start, I think it was bombs they were going to do and create that the Cubans were attacking. And this is you can see this stuff. It's a government paper, American government paper. So then they can attack Cuba. So this is what they were trying to do.
Yeah, and that's there online for everyone.
That's constant. And they say that's what the 9/11 thing was after that.
Yeah.
They just used it for that there, but switched the whole thing. But the false flag with this is, imagine aliens start attacking the Earth and it was like, or actually, there is aliens.
Yeah.
So it's really shit, what do we do? Full control. Like, and all I was just, we're just shooting these missiles up into the sky now. I think we actually mentioned all this before after watching it. But
Go on.
What do you think about that? So what do you think about the lads actually flying around the saucers to get the sightings and then deny them, to create them. Yeah. And after a little while when it's all ready to go, say, do you know what? You're dead right. And if they admit it, everyone will be like, shit.
Yeah. That could be it. I mean, they could have these sites and they're figuring out how to fly these things and then have them attack us, and it's them all. Yeah. You said it already, but it's a weird one. And other people said this as well. But I often think all the movies we watch about aliens and all that, are we being drip-fed this to give us this perception of more often than not, the alien movies, they always attack us. We always had to fight against them. They all looked a certain way. It's been all sort of the seeds being planted in our minds so that if they ever did show up, you're nearly like, don't trust them.
Absolutely. Like Mars Attacks.
Yeah.
Do you know, like, they create that one, remember?
Yeah. What a movie.
Yeah, rap movie.
I'll tell you what, if you ever high, I know you don't. That's the movie.
You watch Mars Attacks high, dude.
Eating cereal,
watching Mars Attacks in your jokes. That is
the movie. Robin, of choice.
They were Sundays I'm made of.
Yeah.
They were Sundays I'm made of.
Not me, of course.
Next door neighbor. Say if it wasn't a situation where they did attack, like, wouldn't Independence Day be a great film to kind of describe what probably would happen.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Like the snow beer place, when the snow came to Jobstown, like the world is on a tittle when it comes to like all out like warfare if you must between the yourselves, like that's society's it. Just like doesn't take a lot for it to just sort of knit and get tread.
Yeah,
you society to just collapse.
I mean, you go back to like cavemen and you see how did anyone ever behave like that, or how did anyone ever act like that? But
imagine rocking in next door, smashing somebody in a club, robbing his wife and his children and dragging them into your cave.
That's it. That's how it would happen. But yeah, all that like Black Flag stuff, I know you were talking about the Cuban one, and JFK stopped it. That had been signed off and JFK found out about it and he stopped it. And then shortly after he was assassinated.
And the Kennedys were not supposed to be in a lion. Like the Kennedys were like wanted like puppet up, built up from the start. Do you know what I mean? Looking that way. You're an Irish family.
Yeah.
And like they were not supposed to be the presidents.
They broke the mold a little bit.
Yeah, but apart from the old what's a Merriman Low yoke, that's a weird one, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah. If you haven't checked this, we just talk about this stuff because you know what? They hide stuff in plain sight. So all of this stuff is sometimes just hidden right in front of you. And it's like, not hidden, should stare. Well, then it couldn't be. Should hide that.
I thought they made a good point in that podcast, the Joe Rogan one, where they said basically, like, Joe was like, I'm sure that the government pay lunatics to come out and go, oh, aliens, it's true, I've seen all this. Yeah, they pay them to go out. And then there's so many of them that it oversaturates the market, basically. So the people that are genuine and telling the truth, you're like, oh, they're all crazy, they're all the same, don't believe him. And I think what Bob Lazar said and talked about is true, but what's not to say he could be a plant and he's not.
But it's mad how this stuff starts coming out now. Like, how is he not dead?
That's exactly all. So that's what you're
like. He not like?
Maybe he's a plant.
You know what I mean? And maybe we need this. Let's start drip feeding this in now. Because if, say, someone like that was to come out and start giving that and tell it after walking for them and all, like, there's a good chance something would happen to him.
Yeah. I don't think he is a plant, though. I hope he's not.
I hope he's not. Please do
that
not.
That stuff
be a plant.
Is exciting.
But, I'll leave it on this, though. I call it the rice in the bowl effect, right? 1 grain of rice, stick it in the bowl. You know exactly what it is. 2 grains, 3 grains, 4 grains, 4 grains. You know exactly what it is. Throw a load of grain into the rut, you'll never find them grains again.
Yeah.
So same way with people come out with this smartness and they're actually telling the right stuff. And so you can't get rid of that. Because if you say, it's not true, it's not true, it's denial, then it becomes this story. And people want to hear the outcome. And it's like, it's going from one way to the other way. Do you know what I mean? But if all of a sudden you just put loads more shite in on top of the shite, people just get bored looking themselves, and it's like you can go and look for yourself. And if you are into art like that, or you even think like that, you're a psychopath. There's something wrong with you. You know what I mean? The book I'm reading, Change Your Mind by Mike Pollan, about the creation of like hallucinogenics and stuff like that, the effect on your body and all different types of ones. Like, we always go on about that stuff in here, but I think a huge part of that had to be stopped in a part of like, so say when they start figuring out kind of some. All this mind control stuff and all, they obviously had to get results in some things, and it might have been like, listen, it's going to take us 100 years to do that. Let's start now. How do we start? We start making films, and we start, you know, I mean, we start making this, and we push it in, we drip feed it into society, but it's going to take 50 years for us to do it. What do we need to do? We need to block the stuff that makes people switched on. Sound, what's that? And they were doing, they put massive amounts of money they were putting into using psychedelics for treatment in addiction, treatment in schizophrenia, treatment in people that had died. So say people that died in your family, there's guys that have went to them, but have used psychedelics and got answers there in a way that, like, there was one guy in the book and he's reading and he said that he was sitting on his father's knee when his father, and his father died when he was 2 years of age, and he said, it cured me. He said, I mourned on a psychedelic trip. And like, if you call it like a drug trip, it's like, whoa. You know what I mean? But if it's like, it's a medicine to alleviate your mind. And the idea is like, all right, sound. So if you chop your hand off here, I can give you a medicine that makes you not feel that anymore. Sound, give it to me, your hand's off. some people I go around and that Mullion's not there. Like Philip Mulpeters would be a great one to watch for it.
That was brilliant.
The way he describes it, a little bit to be the wave of the weekend, so we're talking even more with it. But not only that, I was talking to Dan Healy about it as well, trying to get that on. But the idea, he knows how your brain works and what's going on and where's it going. Because then people just break that down to be like, that's just, you're just delirious or you're delusional. You're tripping out, you know what I mean, in that way. But that's another way I said, say if they hit all of that stuff, that's the eye-opener. So say from all of that time, say from the 20s up to the 70s, they were putting millions into it to figure out what it was, Robin. And they never found that more like helpful to people that were, say, terminally ill from cancer and stuff like that. Where it made 80% of the people, I think, of what they did the research with, it went away. The fear of death went away. The last little story I tell you on it is about a guy went on a trip, right? So went on this trip. Sounds so nice, doesn't it? Go on a trip.
Yeah,
and he met this being called I Am. Alright? So this thing in there was saying to him, I Am. So there's different realms to it. And he said it was pure love. So it's like this blaze of light it was. And every time he touched it, he just felt this big rush of love. Alright? Not only that, but other people had met this being and it named itself as I Am, right? And other people would speak different languages that had no connection to anybody had the same story.
That's insane.
Same. And the same people had the same reaction of when they came back, it was like that they gained something off them. And they said that only some people could see them, and it might have been something to do with your mind or your maturity or your genetics or even... you might have been this kind of one of these beings or something, you know what I mean? And every time they talk about love then, the whole body just flooded with like happiness. And every time, all you had to do was think of love. And you were saying that like the part of your brain, like you acquire that when you meet this being, the I Am being.
Where did you say we could buy this stuff? Send me a link. Ask the honey badger to send me a link, will you?
Yeah, it's like, they're going to show us where to sell it now, where to buy it now.
It
just
flashes up on the bottom of the screen.
Me and Robin have invested in the loads of psychedelics, by the way. That's not what we're investing. We haven't.
No.
Don't buy them. Don't do drugs. Drugs bad, okay?
Yeah,
Stay in school, yeah. That was a bit of crack, wasn't it?
Yeah, that was good.
Enjoyed that.
Yeah. Just before, last thing. Artem gave an interview with Mike Life just after his fight. And he's looking, he interested in the idea of doing a boxing match. Called out Amir Khan.
Oh,
what are your thoughts on that?
I remember a funny situation. I was up the north of Connor and we were watching Brave, and Amir Khan is like a friend of the guy that owns Brave, and he went up to me, Connor, and we were all sitting there, and Amir Khan was behind us, and he was kind of waiting to get into Connor, and we all noticed him, and we like just pretend we didn't for a few minutes, just see how long he'd stay there. He stayed there. Yeah, but then he came in. He was actually sound.
Yeah,
he's really sound.
He seems all right, but Artem's point is he's at that stage of his career where he's probably not going to fight for a world championship again. Artem's just interested in taking on any challenge.
Taking on heads.
Yeah, he said, why not? Why don't we have a fight and make some money out of it?
I think if Artem clipped him, he'd knock him out cold.
Really?
And that'd be it. Yeah, no, Amir Khan is long and fast, and you know what I mean? But like, Artem just has to land that one shot with him, and I think he'd knock him out. You know what I mean? Now, Amir Khan is a fast man as well, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
He reminds me a lot of Prince Nassim Hammett at the time. Now,
yeah.
He was underrated. Like, I know he wasn't. Like, people don't talk about him as much as they should when it comes to like the talks of some of the greats. You know what I mean? But then, saying this, Henry Cejudo was at the going off the head, didn't he?
Yeah,
see that?
He was wearing the crane. And
oh, no, but you called out Lobachenko.
I seen that, yeah.
Lobachenko.
Madness. Absolute madness.
It was a boxing match.
That would be the mismatch.
Lobachenko would batter him. Now, MMA or wrestling or any form of grappling, even being knitting or something like that, you might win, but not a boxing match.
No.
Not a chance. That man is a robot. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
He knows the game. He's completed it.
He's the most technically perfect boxer.
Absolutely. It's incredible.
His generation. And just finally wrapping up that documentary.
I have a chest infection. I'm going to be dying. I am. Next person to guess the command is going to be a chest infection off the mic.
Yeah.
We're going to have to clean this bad boy.
We won't use that one. We'll use that one. But just that documentary, Bob Lazar, Area 51 and Flying Saucers. It's out on Netflix now. For anyone interested, go check it out. Go check out the podcast. with Joe Rogan as well. None of these are sponsors, by the way. We're just saying like that.
We're just all right, you know what I mean? Myself.
Yeah.
That was episode 82. Look after yourself.